Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Bo Schilling from Akaska, South Dakota. Bo is a young 18-year-old that is making big waves in the tournament scene, the walleye tournament scene this year. A runner-up finish at the National Team Championships down on Francis Case out of Pickstown. That's a 300-boat field with so many of the top walleye pros in it, and a runner-up finish down there, phenomenal. He won a Sakakawea tournament. That was a Casino Cup walleye series tournament out of Newtown, another Missouri River reservoir that's not his home body of water. But now coming back, where he's at on Lake Oahe, his home body of water, he and his tournament partner, Ben Beadle, another phenomenal stick, young stick from down there, they won the coveted South Dakota Governor's Cup this last weekend. It's a phenomenal story. I'm excited to have it here on the JMO Podcast. But Bo specifically, I mean, the fishing stories are great, but Bo is a phenomenal kid. His mom, Shonda, and father, Chad, have raised a phenomenal young man. And his sister, Sam, she's part of this story because she fished with Chad, her dad, legendary Chad Schilling. They finished second in the Governor's Cup. I mean, it's a family affair going on down there. And I tell you what, Bo is just a diamond in so many ways. He's putting in the time and figuring this stuff out, and he's doing great in these tournaments because he's a hard worker and he's super smart. It's cool that he's a great kid. But also, interestingly, he's been guiding for the family business. That's Oahe Wings and Walleyes out of Akaska. He's been guiding since before he had a driver's license. His grandpa had to back the boat in for him so that he could take clients out fishing. And I mean, he's got the hours. He's got the experience. He's an 18-year-old live scoper that's also probably caught exponentially more fish, bottom bouncing on contours before live scope even came out. I mean, he's just really unheard of. And there's a whole lot of fishing to get to in this. Like I said, some great tournament finishes, and we try to touch on all of them as fast as we can. So enjoy it. This will not be the last time by a long shot. Bo Schilling from Akaska, South Dakota. Let's get to it. We're all looking to have the ultimate edge on the water, but how do we get there? When it comes to fishing rods, JT Outdoor Products has you covered. Their technique-specific rods are engineered and tested by tournament professionals to give you the competitive advantage on the tournament trail, or the extra edge to the passionate everyday angler. They're hand-built in Farmington, Minnesota. With the highest grade carbon fiber blanks and the finest componentry, JT rods are ultra lightweight, incredibly sensitive, and built for performance. Whether you're after walleye, bass, pike, or panfish, they have every species covered. Their rods deliver precision, durability, and unmatched feel. Don't settle for ordinary. Fish smarter with JT Outdoor Products, where performance meets perfection. Visit them at jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Do yourself a favor, check them out today. TKI CNC produces reliable, meticulously crafted marine components for every fishing adventure. If you're going to be doing any boat rigging whatsoever this season, check out a complete listing of products at tkicnc.com. There you'll find lots of things, including the multi-purpose rod holders and their forward sonar pole mounting kits. These product designs specifically maximize your efficiency and reliability in the boat. This is why so many hardcore anglers, including tournament anglers, are turning to TKI to accessorize their boats. For a detailed look or in-depth tutorials, check them out on YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram at TKICNC. New fishing regulations on Mille Lacs Lake in Minnesota have walleye anglers excited. To plan your next fishing vacation over there, check out the lodging options over at Chalet on Mille Lacs. They have all you need and more. I'm talking about multiple private shorelines, including a back channel where you can safely park your boat overnight, a great feature you're not going to find everywhere on the lake. There's also a game room, high-speed Wi-Fi, you're minutes away from the casino and golf course, the indoor and outdoor amenities of the Chalet on Mille Lacs epitomize comfort and convenience with 5 bedrooms, 3 baths, that's 2 masters, a large kitchen, all the indoor amenities that are perfect for large groups or multiple families. This cabin comfortably sleeps 8. You can add more if you like. Read the reviews online from past guests on the website or book directly at chaletonmillelacs.com. That's chaletonmillelacs.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work. Here at the JMO headquarters, we are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at RizaviTaxidermyStudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. You know, we're going to get into some of these good stories here that are more recently, but I kind of want to hear a little bit more about you know, your past and where you're from. So give me what you got.
I'm Bo Schilling. I'm from Okaska, South Dakota. I actually never really got into fishing. I grew up into it, you know, growing up fishing with my old man, and we dabbled in some tournaments, and I boat boyed for him my whole life pretty much. I think I was out there when I was in the way and not helping much, and then I started helping a lot, and started guiding for him. I think I did my first group when I was, before I could even drive, because you don't need a guide license or anything. I was pretty sure I was 13 when I did my first group guiding for my old man, and then bought my first boat at 14 and never looked back, I guess.
You know, I mean, obviously those are the cliff notes, but it's pretty, like, pretty genuine there. Like, it's not like you got into fishing, you were kind of baptized into it.
Yeah.
True enough. I've had your dad on, I've met your dad, I've massive respect for your dad, but I don't want to, you know, talk about, you know, the fact that it's just your dad that we're sitting here talking. You're obviously doing a lot of the fishing. It's obviously a passion of yours, you know, so somewhere along the line you were bit by the bug. Do you even think that you could remember back that far? Do you just truly believe that, like, you were just born to love fishing? Like, I'm just so curious if, like, even if it was like you were 4 years old, you remember catching your first fish. Is there like a moment at all that you can put your finger on where it was like, yep, I'm 100% gonna be into fishing the rest of my life?
You know, I actually go out with my dad when I was younger, and I would just help. I wouldn't even fish, and it didn't really excite me that much. And then there was like a period where I was like 12, 13 years old maybe, and I started taking his boat out at night and stuff, and I'm pretty sure that's back when we were jigging pillars at Whitlock's every once in a while. We would take dad's boat from Swan Creek, run down to Whitlock's, burn a tank of gas to catch 123 incher, and I'm pretty sure just going out by myself like that, doing it like that, and catching those big walleyes, I don't know, it just like clicked for me all of a sudden. I went from not being too passionate about it to that's all I ever think about, and I guess it's pretty much all I ever do now, you know. And dad bought an older Pro V here 2 years ago, and that's really where the tournament thing come about. He's like, I'm gonna, you can take it whenever you want, you know, I'll pay for your gas. He's like, I just want you to go do your thing and learn this body of water and learn these fish. And I don't think there's been a week the past two or three summers where I haven't been on the water 4 or 5 days. You know, I had a guy in the cleaning shed today ask me, he was like, how many hours do you think you put on the water in a week? And I was like, I don't even want to know myself. It's like, even after we're done guiding, we'll go back out and go after big ones. Or if we're not guiding, we're fun fishing. If we're not fun fishing, we're tournament fishing or pre-fishing. You know, it's just, I fell in love with it. I like I said, back, there was just a moment in time where it clicked for me, and I haven't looked back. Like I said, it's amazing. I love it, and there's nothing I'd rather do, I guess.
You're an 18-year-old that, and we're going to get into this, you're kind of killing it in this tournament season, some really competitive tournaments this year, but you've been guiding since you were 13. You know all about, you know, contour trolling with bottom bouncers and back trolling and chasing windy points and, like, you know, like what we would call like super old school fishing. You're just like one of the few like stud young kids that can honestly say that you could swing old school too, I guess is what I'm getting at. I just kind of want to like highlight that, man. But it's like interesting. It is.
Yeah. Growing up, all we ever did, like when I really started getting into it, we would like try to snipe the walleye, as they call it now, sniping or whatever. We would snipe them with 2D, you know, off the back of the boat, and we would blind cast all the time. And we're always worried about wind driven fish. We're always worried about like weather and stuff, because you couldn't just go look around with your live scope and find them like you can now. I mean, it was all knowledge back then, and when I started guiding, we didn't have a live scope. Now I don't even know how many live scopes I own. I mean, it's completely changed the game, but I feel like it's in a good way. I mean, all these young guys like me are getting into it because it's they're able to compete now with the great guys, because they don't need to have 15, 20 years of knowledge to keep up with them, you know?
You know, tournament fishing, let's talk about that a little bit. You know, again, we're kind of moving through the timeline kind of fast here, so you know, we don't have to rush. Your dad, a couple years back, your dad got you a Pro V.
Yeah, it was like a 2006 19 footer with a brand new motor on it, and I don't even want to know how much gas I burned. You know, that's kind of what got me into the whole tournament world. I mean, I've really only been fishing by myself and actually competing for the past like 2 years. Of course, I grew up, I won a couple with dad growing up and stuff, but that doesn't count for me. I'm pretty sure he was telling us to get out of the way half the time in those tournaments. I don't know, I've probably fished 6-7 tournaments this past 2 years when I get time. Well, I wasn't super serious, you know. I was a broke 17-year-old, 16-year-old, just trying to pay for my boat and pickup, you know. So I didn't go and gamble them tournaments. But now that I know that I compete, I can compete. I like to go fish more, and I know that I always have a chance if I work hard and stay with them guys.
Yeah, dude. And the first tournament you ever fished, and maybe it's not the first tournament you ever fished, but the first good finish you had, was that the first tournament that you fished? It was right there on your home waters. I know your dad and I talked about it, there was kind of an interesting story there with possibly a really big fish that didn't make it to the scale. I kind of want to hear that.
Yeah, that, I still don't sleep about that fish. It was the Walleye Classic 2 years ago, I believe. Pre-fish was really solid, and going out day one, it was me, Ben Beadle, the guy I just fished the Gov Cups with, and it was his cousin, John Beadle. And John didn't pre-fish or anything at all. He was just hopping in for a third guy, so we got that third over, you know. And we went out day one and absolutely whacked him. We had a 12-5. No, it was a 12-4 and like a high 9-pounder, and then we had decent slots. We threw the biggest bag that tournament's ever seen that first day, and then we were like all really excited about our bag, and then Tyson Keller come in and beat us by a couple ounces. We're like, oh, come on, you know, he's an animal. We were we were excited about our bag, and then day two we went out and we didn't have a fish in the box at like noon, 1 o'clock. And I stuck a 23 incher, and my two buddies were like, we got to keep that, we don't have one. And I was like, guys, I don't know. You know, I was like, I don't care to get fifth place. You know, I want to win it. And we ended up keeping that one. And then I stuck a 28, and we're like, well, we got to keep that one. And then I stuck another 28. And we obviously kept that one. And then my last cast of the day, or like we had 30 minutes left and we needed one slot, and I was falling on a slot and I had a big one swing, and I stuck a 12-5. At that time, it was the biggest fish I ever caught. And I'm not saying we would have won it, but it would have been right there. You know, it was just a bummer because we were young and dumb and kept a 23-incher.
Yeah, but
on Lake Oahe, by the way, we kept a 23-incher. I'm pretty disappointed about that. You live and you learn. You live and you learn.
That had to have been very, like, I don't want to overstate it, I guess, but that's obviously something that you learned tremendously from, and maybe is paying off for you this year.
Yeah, I probably gamble a little too much with my overs nowadays, and it's been working for me, but one of these tournaments, it's going to bite me in the butt. You know, it happens. It's part of fishing. And yeah, that, like I said, you live and you learn on that one. And I'm a, I'm a gambling man. I like to shoot for the best I can do, and obviously it doesn't always work out, but it's worked out for me the past couple ones.
Yeah, and you know, and we're just kind of talking about the last couple of years, you know, fishing, you know, Oahu, which is your home body of water. But let's talk a little bit about your season this year, because you're not just fishing your home body of water anymore. In fact, you fished a 300 boat field on not your home body of water and had a pretty good finish. I want to hear that story.
Francis Case, my I guess it was my second time down there. I went down there one time in like April to Chamberlain to go up to that bite, but that was really, we were just fishing out of a pontoon for fun, and that was really my first time breaking down that body of water, and it was a blast. I'm not gonna lie, it was one of the most fun fisheries I've been to. We were partnered up with Garrick McComsey and Max Sheets, so that obviously helped. Those McComsey has done well there for a while. We were staying together and helping each other out. We found a couple bites, and like a lot of the guys, we were jigging trees and a lot of jig wraps and stuff. Pre-fish was good. We found one big fish bite that ended up doing us well, but the reason we got second was because the winner, he also found the bite. We were back there the last day of pre-fish. I was checking, making sure my big ones were there at that spot, and I look over and here comes Max, and he texts me and he's like, "I see you." I was like, "I see you too, buddy." I was like, because he was before me that day of the tournament. He was, I don't know if he was 100 boats before me or what. And I said, "Just leave a couple for me." And he said, "I only need two." I was like, "Crap, he knows they're big too." I was hoping he was going back there to get his slots or something, and he knew they were big. So day one of that tournament, I believe we had 15-5. We played it pretty safe. Like everybody says, you can't win it on the first day, but you sure can lose it. We played it pretty safe. We let go a couple small overs, and I think we had a 23 and a 22 we kept, but the 23 was really healthy. So we were feeling pretty good. I think we were sitting in about 12th after day one. I was like, "We're good, you know, we're gonna go do better tomorrow." We kind of felt out everybody, and obviously the top 12 guys aren't gonna do just as good, you know. And day two, I believe we had 16-10 or something like that. Don't quote me on that. We were let go a bunch of overs. I think we had 223s, but both of them were 4.5 pounders, you know, so that really helped out. And then we had really good slots. We were on an amazing slot bite that whole tournament. And day three, I was like, "Here, we're swinging big," you know, especially with like guys like Max and Tyson and Dewey. Those guys are animals. You gotta expect they're gonna go out there and do it again, you know. You can never count those guys out. So that's what we did. We ran to our big fish spot to start the day. I believe like my second cast of the day was a 4.5 pounder, and I was like, "Here, if we stick this one in, our next one can't be under 6-7 pounds," you know. And we decided we're gonna stick that one in, and I ran the spot, casted a couple of the right ones. Nothing wanted to go. And then I seen the one, and I was like, "Gear, this is the one we need, buddy." And I was like, first cast swung on me hard, like super hard. I was throwing a number seven at it there, and I was like, couldn't get it to bite. I could just get it to swing, and I was like, "Gear, tie me up a different color or something, you know." I was like, "Figure something out." And right as I said that, that fish swung up and smacked it. I was like, "Get the net, get the net." And I have never like freaked out so bad about a 6.5, 7 pound wall. I don't remember what it was. I seriously was shaking so bad I couldn't talk. I was like, "Please, Lord, stay pinned. Please, Lord, stay pinned. Please, Lord." And Gear was freaking out, and I was freaking out. We ended up getting that one in the boat and ran damn near half the way back till we were on a a tree bite that had really good slots, and really nobody else was fishing. That was the main issue down there. There's a lot of guys on that knew about like the main or the common trees and stuff, like where everybody else was fishing. So you needed to kind of find your bite on your own if you wanted consistent good slots. And we found a couple of those bites, and I ended up getting a 19 that was like 3-4. That really helped out. And then our other two or three slots, or how many, I don't remember how many fish we weighed that tournament, were really good ones. And you know, we ended up getting 18 pounds, 15 ounces, absolute giant bag for Francis Case. Can't complain. Dad told me I had to go out there swinging big, and that's exactly what I did. And I guess Max ended up getting a 7-pounder to seal the deal. So he got us by, I believe it was like 14, 15 ounces. So it was, I cannot complain at all. It was a great tournament, and it was an awesome experience. And I'm looking forward to going back. It was fun.
But was that your first, I think that's like the biggest walleye tournament field in the country. So, you know, massive tournament, but was that your first big tournament off of your home body of water, like away from Oahu?
Yeah. 100%. I fished a couple of casino tournaments with my dad last year, but that's 100 boats. You know, it's not that caliber of tournament. So yeah, that was my first huge tournament off my home body. Yes.
You talk about you had a good network that was kind of plugging you in or cluing you into some things. But when you're on the water and you're fishing, like, are there some things that are, you know, just feel like glaringly different, you know, when you're on a different body of water? Or is there just something to the process and strategy where it's like the same everywhere?
You know, there was one thing that really stuck out to me that was weird about them fish. There was absolutely no bait. I don't know what those fish ate, but I seen like two schools of bait in the 6 or 7 days. I guess it was 8 days we were there. Cause 5 days pre-fish, 3 tournament. Yeah. 8 days we were there. So, there was zero bait. So they were super aggressive, like super aggressive. The only problems with the slots, they didn't always finish. If you could find the bigger ones, usually you could get them to swing and hit it, but the slots wouldn't always finish. They'd like shoot up and stop, which blew my mind. Well, when we first got there, they all bit, but after getting pressured by that many bullets for that long, you know, it takes a toll on them. And same thing with the Governor's Cup. I mean, them fish were nuts the first couple of days, and they just slowed down, but that's just from all the pressure and stuff. You know, there's like you say, there's always comparable notes, like the Missouri River, like you hop reservoirs or whatever. There's always going to be comparable notes, but there's always going to be stuff that's different. Like it's crazy how some parts you'll be as far back in a bay you can go, or you'll be out in the middle on trees. You know, it's there's always comparable notes. And like you said, if you know walleyes well, you will be able to figure them out, especially with this live scope stuff. You can see how they react. You can see what they want. And that bite was pretty simple. I mean, to get the slots to bite, all I would do is I would reel super fast, and I'd stop my bait, and they would just crush it when I stopped it.
Right on.
And a lot of guys were popping it and stuff, and I would just reel away from them. Once they got like 20 feet under the boat, if they were still chasing, I would stop my bait if they didn't hit it, just like hold it still, and they would smoke it, because they all come so fast. It's almost like you just made them bite, you know.
TKI CNC produces reliable, meticulously crafted marine components for every fishing adventure. If you're going to be doing any boat rigging whatsoever this season, check out a complete listing of products at tkicnc.com. There you'll find lots of things, including the multi-purpose rod holders and their forward sonar pole mounting kits. These product designs specifically maximize your efficiency and reliability in the boat. This is why so many hardcore anglers, including tournament anglers, are turning to TKI to accessorize their boats. For a detailed look or in-depth tutorials, check them out on YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram at TKICNC. We're all looking to have the ultimate edge on the water, but how do we get there? When it comes to fishing rods, JT Outdoor Products has you covered. Their technique-specific rods are engineered and tested by tournament professionals to give you the competitive advantage on the tournament trail or the extra edge to the passionate everyday angler. They're hand-built in Farmington, Minnesota. With the highest grade carbon fiber blanks and the finest componentry, JT rods are ultra lightweight, incredibly sensitive, and built for performance. Whether you're after walleye, bass, pike, or panfish, they have every species covered. Their rods deliver precision, durability, and unmatched feel. Don't settle for ordinary. Fish smarter with JT Outdoor products, where performance meets perfection. Visit them at jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Do yourself a favor, check them out today. New fishing regulations on Mille Lacs Lake in Minnesota have walleye anglers excited. To plan your next fishing vacation over there, check out the lodging options over at Chalet on Mille Lacs. They have all you need and more. I'm talking about multiple private shorelines, including a back channel where you can safely park your boat overnight, a great feature you're not going to find everywhere on the lake. There's also a game room, high-speed Wi-Fi, you're minutes away from the casino and golf course. The indoor and outdoor amenities of the Chalet on Mille Lacs epitomize comfort and convenience with 5 bedrooms, 3 baths, that's 2 masters, a large kitchen, all the indoor amenities that are perfect for large groups or multiple families. This cabin comfortably sleeps 8. You can add more if you like. Read the reviews online from past guests on the website or book directly at chaletonmilax.com. That's chaletonmilax.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work. Here at the JMO headquarters, we are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at rizavitaxidermystudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. You know, pre-fishing or looking for fish, or you know what, you know, in scramble mode, whatever it is, when you're trying to find fish, are you like exclusively on your live scope, or are you you know, do you travel around, you know, like we, you know, not that long ago it was such a big deal with side imaging or 2D to you know, high speed graph, or you know, side imaging, just looking around where, you know, nobody would cast at fish anymore. You just go around and look for them. Like, but now with forward sonar, that game's changed a little bit too. I'm curious for your process when you're breaking down water, like what's a little bit of your process in the boat as far as like what you're looking for and how you operate?
So I, what I do is I kind of like, before I go out, like if I have no idea, like let's say pig sound, I just sat on my graph for a little while and looked at the stuff I wanted to cover and looked at the stuff I wanted to fish, you know, like just breaks and sets of trees that look good to me. And it's all a Dr. Sonar chip down there, so it's not super up to date, but they're really good chips. They show a lot of structure and show most of the points and stuff. And I would just kind of look over and like look for old creek channels and stuff like that. You know, I'd look over the stuff I want to fish, and then I'd go out and I would check these spots, and I would check, like, let's say I would check breaks, ledges, points, trees, and like wherever I seen fish there, I would try to mimic that somewhere else and see if they'd be there too. You know, like, if I find them on a point here that looks like this, I would go mimic that and try to find them on a point over here that looks like this. So like there it was, I really liked the mouths of bays. Like those trees were really good. Like I would find good trees on the mouth of bays that held a little more fish. So I would try to mimic that and find other sets of mouth, like the mouth of bays where they had good trees, you know, and that really worked for us there. Like, I felt like they just slid out of the backs of the bays right before we got there. And like the slots, they would slide out and they would all be sitting in front of the mouths of the bays. And that was mainly what I did there. I mean, I obviously covered a lot of water in them 5 days, but then that seemed to produce the most fish for us.
Dude, you had a pretty phenomenal finish up on Sakakawea. Again, you know, it's a similar story, so to speak. It's a Missouri River reservoir, but it's definitely not your home body of water. And, you know, as I'm repeating myself, no, none of these bodies of water are set up the exact same. We're also talking about changing the time of year a little bit. But you went up there with your dad and, or you didn't fish with your dad, but I mean, your dad was up there too. And you fished the Sakakawea in the Casino Cup. Tell me a little bit about that one.
Yeah, that was a blast. I was planning to get into the Matt Hill tournament right here, and then Dad's like, "Well, I'll come up to Sakakawea and pre-fish with me, and then hop in the tournament for a day." And I was like, Actually sounds like fun. I had a blast cockwheel last year. Me and dad fished together. We had a bad tournament. Really windy day. You know, it was just one of those days. I messed up way too much that day, and I just had a bad tournament day. And I was like, I'd like to go redeem myself. And we went out there and had a terrible pre-fish. Really, we pre-fished 2 days, and then I found something at the end of the second day. But I was having trolling motor battery issues, and I was getting my butt kicked that tournament or that pre-fish. I was just having a bad pre-fish and nothing was working, and I had to get new batteries and stuff and fix electrical issues and got that all fixed up. We thought anyways, and the third day I went out and I caught a 7-pounder and dumped another one in that last day of pre-fish, but I knew it was right. You know, it was a big one. And I was like, holy crap, we might be onto something here. You know, I tried doing that shallow stuff that whole tournament. Like, I just couldn't get on the big overs, and like a lot of them 23s, 24s, 22s, but I knew it was going to take 29 to 30 pounds, 32 pounds to win that thing. And I was like, I gotta go do my thing. I gotta go out and to the deep stuff and do my thing. So actually that last day I went out and I focused on deep stuff and like good points and ledges and like 30 foot of water, throwing finishers. And it really works for me. Then we were going into tournament day. I started that spot where I found them that last day of pre-fish, and my fish were completely gone. I ran that whole thing. I probably seen 30 big ones there the night before, and there was not a big fish there. I seen like 1 4-pounder, and I didn't bite. So then you're talking, it's 9:30, 10 o'clock already in the tournament day, and you're going hunting. You know, I was like, I know they got to be here somewhere. I was like, I told my tournament partner, I was like, I'm fishing with Hunter friend there. I was like, just trust me. I was like, it's going to be a grind, but we're going to find these things. I just, once I find them, I got to get them to go. And we probably drove, we were already making a 45-mile run or something ridiculous one way, a 50-mile run. And then we drove 15 miles more, 10 miles more, and we ended up finding them. And it was, I caught like a 4-pounder, my first one. I was like, well, that one can go in. And my next, or like 10 casts later, I was lucky enough, I stuck like an 8-pounder, I believe. And then I freaking, so I was fishing the finisher. I was like really snapping it, really being aggressive with them, trying to make them react and make them commit. I was just keeping it above them and taking it away from them and snapping the crap out of it. And so when they'd be coming, you wouldn't always feel the bite because you were taking it away so fast. It was just kind of a nip. And I yanked it away from two of the right fish. Like we're talking 8-9-pounders in this cockaway. And I was like, oh my gosh, Hunter, those were the ones, dude. I messed them up. I was like, dude, I'm sorry. And I was like, I'll keep going. And like 10 casts later, I stuck a 10-pounder, a 9.5-pounder. And I was like, oh my goodness, dude, that's the fish we needed. I was like, if we get one more, we got this, dude. We need one more. And I got like one more 3.5-4-pounder. I was like, dude, we need one more. And then my trolling motor batteries died. And Hunter was running the big motor. And we had a converter in the boat. We had just enough. The converter wasn't enough to charge it. It would throw a code. It wasn't a thick enough cable. So, but it would charge it just enough where it would turn on and I could turn the trolling motor head. So Hunter was driving me around with the big motor while I'm trying to snipe with a trolling motor, no power. And I had another good one swing on me, but I never stuck anything after that. So we come in and I was like, I think we got 26, 27 pounds, you know, and we ended up weighing, and we had 29.52, and second place had 29.22, and we ended up getting it done.
Yeah, dude. That's awesome, man.
I told everybody it was the best, worst day of fishing I've ever had. I was like, it was the most fun and most tough day I've ever fished in my life.
Oh, man. Are you still fishing in the pro, in the Pro V that your dad got you?
No, I actually... upgraded last fall. I found a really good deal on a one out in or it was out on one of the great, or where did I go? Duluth, Minnesota. I drove 10 hours to pick up a bullet I found a really good deal on, and I've been running a 219 Lund now with 400 L6. It's a great boat. I've had my fair share issues with electrical crap, but that's just bad luck, you know.
The boats
treated me very well. I really love them ones. They're really good to me. Don't get me wrong. I don't know how many 30 inchers I caught in that 1970 Pro V or whatever. I got a lot of big fish out of that old thing, but I upgrading to the big waters, I had to get a bigger boat.
Well, tell me about the Gov Cup this year, man. Let's get to that story. But I do appreciate, you know, just having a chance to kind of chop up a little bit of your history and kind of, you know, how you've been developing over the years. But man, it's like, I don't know, man, like this Gov Cup, I might be assuming a little bit too much here, but we've talked about some good finishes that you've had, but we're coming off of this Gov Cup win that you just had. I mean, this is like the top of the mountain, right?
Dude, it was phenomenal. I'm blessed. I am blessed. I can tell you that. The boss let me off work a couple days so I could go pre-fish a little early. And you got to run everything by the boss before you go. And by the boss, I mean my mom, not my dad.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, dude. She treats me and dad pretty well. She lets us sneak away for a little while. And actually, it was how you want pre-fish not to go. I found the big ones the first day we were there, and Dad will tell the story. I'm sure most everybody heard it now. He was like, Dad put in at bushes and I put in at the dam down there. And he was like, I'll meet you in the middle somewhere. And he says I met him at bushes, which I didn't meet him that far down, but I did meet him always down there. I burned some gas that day. And first day of pre-fish, I whacked like an 8.5 pounder. And I was like, you got to catch two or it's a fluke, you know. That's our kind of our rule, you know. You got to catch two, or at least you got to have another one hooked, you know. You got to know it's right. And right after I got that 8.5, my tournament partner Ben Beadle, he's a great fisherman. He's a really good partner to have. He stuck like a 10.5 or something. They're like, oh my gosh, dude, they're not supposed to have these here, you know. These are supposed to be far and few in between. So there's a big storm rolling in. We ran off. We headed back to Garrick's, sat down, talked to Dad. I was like, Dad, if these fish stay, these are the winning fish. And he was like, oh, you got a week. We're like, yeah, well, I guess that's true. You know, we'll keep grinding. We'll try to find something else. And worked our butts off all week. I won't lie. We covered some water. We fished everything we could think of. I mean, from trees to points to suspended to out in the middle, just looking for something sitting there, you know. I mean, to up shallow, pitching crawlers. We pulled bouncers even out there. Like, you're just like, the slots got really tough out there. Like, from the first day we were there to the last day they were there, it was a complete change of the bite. Like, the slots completely calmed down and stuff. And they got, like, kind of finicky. Well, I'm sure they got cast at 10 million times. That don't help. When number 9 jig wraps are falling in front of them 3/4 of the day. So we found a couple slot bites that were pretty good, but nothing like great, you know. We were more worried about our big fish, because obviously your big fish go a long ways in a big tournament. And then we found, Dad ended up finding a really good main river bite, like a really good bite. Like, he said, he called me and he's like, Bo, I just seen like 50 big ones in an hour. I was like, Dad, I don't believe you, you know. I was like, you got to catch one. I was like, it doesn't count unless you catch one. And before my text apparently didn't go through, he was like, I knew you were going to say that. And then next thing you know, he gets a 9 and a 6. And you're like, holy crap. Thank goodness. You know, that's good. That's good to have. And we kind of mimicked like what Dad did. He found some weird bite off the edge of this point that was holding a lot of big ones, and we kind of mimicked that. And me and Ben ended up the second to last day of pre-fish. We mimicked that, and we found a really good bite down by the boundaries at It was like 5 miles from the boundaries, and pull up, I seen a big one on my graph, like before I even put the trolling motor in the water. I'm like, holy crap, spin the boat around, flip at it. It was a 10.5 or something. I was like, oh my goodness. And we keep looking around, and we marked probably 15 hogs there. And I'm like, oh my goodness. It's like pre-fish is going too well, you know. It kind of scares you when pre-fish is that good. You're like,
oh yeah,
now I have to do good or I mess this up, you know. And last day of pre-fish, it wasn't really a lot of fishing. We were just checking stuff. We were fishing for some slots. Like me and Ben put the bouncers down for like an hour that last day of pre-fish, and we caught our 8-9 pounds of the slots in like 10-15 minutes that last day. And we're like, well, that feels good, you know. We got a good plan, and went down to check our spot down by bushes. I don't even know what the names of the bays are called down there, I'd tell you. And those fish were all gone, completely gone. Them fish move so much there. It's tough, because one day you'll catch 5-6 big ones down there, and the next day you won't see one. It's crazy how much them fish move.
Yeah.
And we're like kind of freaking out, so we went and talked to Dad, because we're like, we only have a couple spots now, you know, because our plan B just left us completely gone. And he was like, well, go to your spot where you found them the first day and catch a big one. I'm like, okay. I called him 20 minutes later. We caught a 12-pounder.
Man.
I was like, God darn.
I mean, Oahe's got giants, but it's not that simple, right? I mean,
it's not that simple
in the middle of July.
I had so many guys come up to me and ask me, they're like, what are you doing? You know, I was like, you guys, it is time put in. I preach that. I mean, you got to go do it. Putting time in and learning, like mastering it is all of it. I mean, I don't know if there's anybody who goes out more than I do. And I'm not really, like, it's not something I learned overnight. Like, I am out there every single day live scoping. It is like, if I'm not tournament fishing or guiding, I'm out there fun fishing, you know, learning more. Like, you can never do enough. You can never get good enough at it. You always, like, gotta want to be better at it, especially to keep up with these guys nowadays. I mean, look at Dewey and Tyson. Those guys are winning everything right now, you know, and they're animals. And Dewey's kicking butt on the tour. I was like, you can never, like, not expect those guys to go throw a huge bag. And,
yeah.
And, like, Dad obviously was on really good fish. Garrick McComsey, the guy we were standing with, was on really good fish. I heard a couple good reports while we were out there. Like, it's going to take – we were thinking it was going to take 24, 25 pounds a day to win it. And so day one of the tournament, we go out, and it was just, you know, when it's your day kind of day. I think we had 2 over 11 pounds in the box at 10:30. And now
tell me this. Now, we talk about the fish being there one day, gone the next or whatever, but to just kind of describe that a little bit more to me, I don't go down there very often, but I'm fascinated by it. Like realistically, is finding the big fish, like, is there a lot of big fish around? Is the hard part catching them, or is the hard part just literally finding them and being around them? You can catch them, or is both hard? Like, finding them hard and catching them hard. I'm kind of sort of curious on a more detailed description of what that's like.
It's both, to be honest. It is tough to find a good number of big fish down there. Like, you'll see one here and there spread out. It's no pattern, though. Like, there's just a random one here and there. And the fish we found that first day, there was multiple of them in a certain area. I bet we seen 5-6 of them that first day we were out there. And we're like, holy crap. You know, I seen 3 all pre-fish last year. I come down and I didn't fish the Gov's Cup last year, but I pre-fished that a little bit. And I seen 3 in them couple days I was down here, and I just seen 6 in 15 minutes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing about the fish moving is, I don't know if they're chasing. Like Dad says, I think they're following herring. I really do believe that, because every time we found big fish, there's herring around.
Sure.
They're not just sitting there for no reason, you know. They slide up. When they're hungry, they slide up and eat. I'm sure they go lay on bottom in 30, 40 foot somewhere when they're not hungry, or do whatever they do. But when they slide up and they come up off bottom a little bit and they're active, that's what you're looking for. And And usually when they're around bait, they're doing that, you know?
Yeah.
So and also catching them, like you said, is it, I bet we threw at, oh, I don't know how many big ones we threw at that last day. I almost wanted to cry about 2 o'clock that second day. We casted and casted. What I would do is I found a pod of probably every time I would run this stretch, I would see like 10 to 15 big fish. And I just knew eventually that one or two of them would bite. And I would leave it, go look for other ones, and then I'd come back. I'd leave it, go back, look for other ones, and then I'd come back. Like I think I ran that stretch 5 or 6 times in that one last day of that tournament. Just to like, because I knew eventually if I kept casting at them, one would bite. I would just like give them a half hour break and come back.
You were just like willing. You were just willing it to happen.
I was just telling Ben, I was like, we're just gonna make them mad till they want to bite. You're like, they're gonna get so tired of looking at a number 9 jig wrap, they're just gonna commit suicide and shoot out and bite that bait. And day one we had a phenomenal day. Like I was saying, we had 2 11-pounders. Had I think 4 2-pound slots or something. We ended up with 31 pounds
mega
or
bag,
something
like
a giant,
like
bag.
All-time mega bag.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, like I said, when it rains, when it's your day, it's your day. It was definitely our day that day, and I can't complain about that day at all. I mean, everything just went perfect.
That'd be like a 55-pound bag on the Great Lakes, you know, where there's no slot.
Yeah,
like that's just like. Unbelievable.
Golly, we messed up bad too. We were weighing our big fish day one and we weighed the wrong one. Huh? We had 11. We lost big fish day one. We weighed the wrong one. That was you live and you learn. That was dumb. We had an 11-11. We actually only weighed our 11-3. Yeah, and then we lost. Somebody weighed an 11-7. That was not very bright on that
course.
Man. Yes. So then day two, that was a grind, man. Talk about a grind. We put in our work for that one. We went out. Obviously, we started same area, you know. And
but you were in first.
I was in first. I had a little over a 3-pound lead, I believe. I had Garrick McComsey behind me, Traver Deagle, and then I think Owen Wilcox and my dad were right there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I told Ben going out, we need 24 pounds, 25 pounds, and I feel really good about weigh-ins and stuff, you know. And on the fish we were on, and we knew it was doable. I was like, I knew I could replicate it. And we went out and absolutely got not denied for 3 and 4 hours straight. It was brutal. Like, couldn't catch a slot fish. Like, I mean, every fish I threw at wouldn't even look at me. I was like, dude, it didn't help. They got pretty pressured that second day. Couple guys come out of the woodworks from who knows where, you know. That's just tournament fishing, but it went from not seeing a boat there to I bet 10 15 boats ran through at tournament day. So they did see a lot more baits that day, and I just kept running through them knowing they would go. And about 11:30, darn near 12 o'clock, I stuck a 19.5, and my tournament partner was, I set the net down, grabbing our coal tags or whatever. They give you tags to put around their mouth for the tournament. You got to tag all your fish. And before he got the tags out of the glove box, I stuck that 11-8 or whatever it was. So, like, they just flipped the switch all of a sudden, and they were biting. And
but you caught, like, a good slot and a massive over. You were in the same spot.
Yeah.
Was that by design? Like, was that something that you had been doing there?
See, I didn't really plan. Like, I wasn't relying on it, but I knew there were some slots there.
Sure, sure.
I wasn't like, this is our only slot spot, you know. I was like, I knew we could pick up a couple. So after that one, I was like, okay, here they go, you know. We're ready to roll. And 2 hours later, we hadn't caught another fish. And we're talking, it's 1 o'clock now. We got 2 in the box. Tournament partner sticks up. Ben, he stuck like an 18, 19-incher. I tagged that one, threw that one in the box. We got 3 fish. I stuck another like 18, 19 right there. The slot slid up a little bit, and we started getting a couple of those. And I was like, okay, let's go do our big fish spot again, because we left them alone for a little while because we're going to go back because we only got one that pass. in that last pass, like an hour left, I broke off or something. I got snagged, broke off. Ben flips out, and I look up, and I'm standing like where the windshield is, and I see this 8-9 or it was a 9.5 pounder come shooting up, and I was like, oh my gosh. And I just grabbed the net and I set the hook. I've never seen a fish come so fast. That thing shot up like a, I don't even know how to describe it. It shot up like 100 mile an hour. It's just crazy how they go from you cast at them 10 times to like all of a sudden they just freak out and shoot out. And then ended up landing that one, and it was a 9.5 pounder, and a lot of weird hugging and
beautiful, and man. Bumps. Beautiful bromance happening.
It was a little weird, but it was awesome.
Oh, dude, nothing weird about it, man. We're talking big walleyes. You can hug whoever you want to. It's safe. It's safe.
I think we were hugging our boat marshal a little bit. it was Kurt's nephew Bodie we had for boat marshal, and he's a great kid.
Does everybody really have a boat marshal? Tell me a little bit about that.
Kurt runs a great show, man. I mean, so I'm pretty sure it's top three. Don't quote me on this. Top three day two. So like when I fish the Gov Cup next year, I automatically get one day one, and I think it's random draw for a couple. So top three get one day two, and then it's random draw for the set or 4 through 10, I believe.
Gotcha.
So it, there's no more honest tournament. Like it is such a well-ran tournament, and like they have people running around constantly checking boats. It's so nice. Like there's zero worries in the world about anyone doing anything funky, and it's awesome. You know, like there's no question about it, and it's a great tournament.
That's awesome. Was the bite window thing, like, was that already on your mind, or were you just like physically willing it to happen? I'm just curious about that. Like how you were processing that, or was it just a function of you? Like you just knew that those were the winning fish and the winning fish weren't going to be, and you didn't want the winning fish to be like anywhere else. Like, I'm just sort of curious, you know, the decision-making behind going back, like not just once, but twice. And, you know, even like, you know, three or more times to run a stretch. I'm just sort of curious about that.
You know, man, I hate to give my dad so much credit, but he does say keep it simple, stupid a lot. And, I really do believe that. I think a lot of guys make it a little too complicated. Like they try to make it hard on themselves. I feel like when a fish is hungry, a fish is going to eat. I feel like they're just like people. I was like, when you're hungry, you're going to go get something to eat. And I felt like when those fish just want to eat, they're going to. So I knew if I kept eventually casting, one would be hungry, you know? So that's why I kept running them. And you could tell they're in a bad – we didn't really have the best weather. It was raining and thunder and lightning that second day. Mm. I mean, it was blowing 30 mile an hour. It is seriously live scope, and if you can do it in hard weather, you will do good. I mean, you got to be able to keep your head down and grind. It was a grind, man. And like I tell everybody, if you're willing to sit there and grind out them two big bites, you will succeed. I mean, it sucks. You can't chicken out. You can't leave your fish. If you know they're there, you got to sit there and grind them. Just like Sakakawea, I told Hunter, I mean, it's going to be a grind, man. And we seriously all day at Sakakawea, we caught – I think eight fish all day. Like it wasn't a beat down by no means. You gotta sit there, keep your head down and trust in yourself and trust in your electronics.
Yeah. But you said you were running jig wraps on those Oahe fish. Is that just kind of like, that's cause I mean, I've done glide bait shows on Oahe for years. Like it just seems like that's been tried and true, and it seems like it's kind of sticking, you know, like that glide bait deal was kind of a craze in a lot of places, but it seems like it's run its course, you know. I mean, the jig crawler thing is kind of a big deal now in a lot of places, and, you know, talking about the finisher on Sakakawea, that's, a you know, been a big one for a year, you know, since that one came out. Interestingly, though, those Oahe fish, they like them glide baits.
Yeah, I was thinking about actually texting Dewey asking if he could give me a number 11s. It was blowing so hard that second day. I seen he was using them. I was like, golly, you know, I was just thinking in my head. I was like, I really wish I had a couple of those get down there a little faster, especially trolling motors coming a foot out of the water, you know. And I was about ready to tell my boat marshal to come sit up under the graphs to get a little more weight in the bow. I was just like, anything to help, you know. And no, it was a grind, man. I mean, you gotta believe in yourself. I mean, you gotta have faith that you're gonna get those two bites. I'm very big on being confident while you're fishing, knowing you can do it yourself and knowing you can get those bites, and going out confident is gonna make your day. I mean, if you're confident going into the day, you know, it already improves your day 100%.
Yeah, dude. That's awesome. Tell me about your partner for the Gov Cup.
Ben, I fished a handful of tournaments now. He doesn't get enough credit, man. He is good. He is really good. He catches more big fish than most guys out of his pontoon, sniping out of a shuttle. he caught a 33-incher out of a Casca last week, and them dummies didn't have a scale on their boat, so he didn't get to weigh it. But he's an animal, man. He sat up front with me the whole tournament. He caught half the big fish. I guess I caught them both the first day. He caught the one the second day, but pre-fish, like, he probably caught more big ones than I did. He's a stick, man.
Yeah, he's on him. That's awesome. And you guys are about the same age?
It was actually his birthday the first day of the Gov Cup. He just turned 20.
No way. Yeah. Birthday, dude. Dang, dude. He's got to be stoked about that. Holy. Yeah,
he had a damn good birthday.
Yeah, dude. That is cool.
No, we were blessed. It went our way, and I mean, Dad ended up getting second too. What a phenomenal tournament.
Yeah, and you guys weren't like, it's not like, I mean, you guys weren't running the exact same fish the whole time.
He told me, he's like, I'm not coming, you know, you got this lead. I was like, he's like, you go out there and you get a decent bag and you got this, buddy. Or he's like, I'll leave you alone and stuff. And he had a phenomenal day too. I'm pretty sure he was in at noon or something crazy. And he'd never even come to our fish. He found his own bite just searching. Like, a lot of guys, they don't have confidence to go search during tournaments. Sometimes you just got to look for them. They do move. I mean, like everybody says, they got fins, they move, they swim around. And like I said, mimicking is huge. Like, you find a bite here doing this, try to mimic that. Or, like, let's say the wind's blowing hard and you can't fish a certain spot. Go mimic it somewhere else that's somewhere that is fishable, you know? Anything to help your day out a little bit can go a long way.
Yeah. That's a phenomenal piece of advice there for wind fishing. Especially on these reservoirs we have out west here that's like...
Yeah, like, let's say down at a Casca, you're fishing a set of trees and the wind's blowing out of the north. Well, go hide behind the shoreline and try to mimic what you're doing there, you know? I mean, there's not always going to be one spot, you know. There's always going to be a couple spots. There's always going to be a couple guys on them. There's always going to be somewhere else you can go find a couple fish. And I know it might not be as good, but you have a lot better chance when you're not slamming your trolling motor out of the water and wrecking all your stuff trying to get that one bite, you know. Like, we had way more wind than we expected, and it actually set down a little bit for us both days, and we made it work. But we had to mimic some stuff, you know. You had to go find some bites out of the wind and try to work through it. You know, you're not always gonna get perfect weather, and live scoping is becoming a huge part of the game. I mean, there's 90% of tournaments, 95% of tournaments, maybe more than that are won live scoping. You know, like. It's the guys who are willing to keep their head down and grind even through the weather.
You could probably, for a lot of people, probably the easiest way to top 10 on Oahu is to troll. But it seems like probably for the foreseeable future, it won't be the easiest way to win.
But. No, a lot of great trollers out there, and like you said, it's an easy way to top 10, but it's very rare nowadays that a troller. Or like let's say a 3-day tournament. Like, how often would you see a 2-3-day tournament won by a troller? You know, nowadays.
Yeah.
Few to none.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, I mean, I think the statistic probably is still true when they talk about like the flip flopping on the reservoirs. You know, any tournament, but like a 2-day tournament or a multi-day tournament, right? It's like, it's so hard to be consistent. But interestingly, you know, it's like, you know, I feel like that live scoping. There's certain individuals that have become like wildly consistent, right? Like guys like Dewey and Tyson and,
you know, Max
and I mean, they're just, it's just like, you know, it almost makes them undeniable. And it's kind of interesting.
Look at like Dewey when he first started, when he first started like really kicking butt. I mean, he what was that run he went on the tour? Like second, first. Like it was nuts, man. I mean, how often do you hear like somebody trolling doing that? You know, it's crazy. What my deal is, trolling is a lot more luck than live scope. But obviously, live scoping involves some luck. You know, the fish got to be in the right mood and got to be doing the right thing. But I'm going and putting my bait on that fish's head instead of hoping that fish will come look at my bait, you know?
Yeah. You're more selective. Yeah, you can be selective versus they are the one, you know, versus putting the ball in the fish's court where they got a bite and then you got to sort through them and hope they come in the right order, right? Like trolling, you don't get to pick what bites. Now, you still don't get to pick what bites when you're live scoping, but you get to pick what you offer.
That is a very good point, because there's a lot of times like in that tournament where I won't cast at 6-7 pounders because, you know, I don't want to make a decision.
There you go. And that's what those trollers, getting back to that, the keeping that 23 incher a couple years ago, you know, it's like that's a thing that's been what the best tournament anglers could do for years, you know, the trollers that, you know, the best guys with the most confidence could throw a 23 incher back. But nowadays you don't even give yourself that, you know, that decision until there's like an hour and a half left, and then you're just, you know, whatever, you're happy to get bit. But yeah.
And you can like run through fish. You can cover, I know like trolling is like covering a lot of water, but I honestly feel like you can cover more water live scoping. Cause it, like trolling, you're pulling your base in one specific line for a certain stretch. Like I'm flying around, my trolling motor never comes off 10. And my dad makes fun of me all the time. He's like, run and gun. And I'm like, I cover more water than anybody. Like, I seriously, my trolling motor, I have that Ultrex Quest, and I seriously have never dialed it off 10. I am constantly flying around finding fish, constantly looking for a big one, like constantly moving, covering water.
Your dad was mentioning that maybe he was going to be down to travel with you a little bit more next year.
Yeah, hey man, I haven't really told a lot of people this yet, but we'll tell them now. We're going on the National Walleye Tour next year, so really looking forward to it, man. We're both getting a new 219 this winter, so yeah, it's gonna be fun, dude. I really love fishing new water. I love catching big walleyes, man. There's nothing better. There's nothing I'd rather do. You know, I love the grind. I embrace it. I love putting in the hours, learning, breaking down waters. I love the grind, man. It is a grind a lot of the times. It is tournament fishing is 10% fun, 90% not fun, you know, but that 10% is worth it, man. I love it, you know?
Yeah, dude. Right on, man. Well, keep grinding and good luck the rest of the way. I don't know what you got left, but of course, then going into next year, obviously good luck there. And, yeah, dude. All good things, man. We'll talk to you.
Hey, it was good talking to you, man.